Hey, baby, I know you've had a hard day. Packing lunches, folding laundry, getting the oil changed in the caravan. Or maybe you've spent 8 hours in the cubicle with that jerk boss looking over your shoulders. Settle down, pour a glass of red, kick your shoes off and forget about your cares, baby. It's time for the Anna and Susanna Show.
Hi, this is Anna Lind Thomas, the second half of the Anna and Susanna Show. Susanna is still out of town. All right, girlfriend's probably having a real good time. And I have informed her that she is missing this incredible joy killer series to her own detriment. Okay, to her own detriment. She's probably complaining and being impatient right now, not realizing that if she had been a part of these podcasts, she would have ended that behavior. Okay, she's probably just ruining her life right now with all of her complaints. Okay, maybe not. She's probably having a great time and it's all good. And Susanna, we miss you. Come back soon. I know you guys miss her as well. So in today's episode, here is what you can look forward to. First, we'll recap our joy killers, number one and number two, that we've already covered. Then we will get into joy killer number three, judging. Sorry, I don't have a budget or the time to give that a really cool sound effect. So you're just going to have to tolerate me doing my best. Okay. But we are talking about judging. And listen, judging can be more detrimental to us and to our health and to our relationships than we even realize. So I can't wait to get into this topic. Then in the end, I am starting a new segment called What I'm Into. And when Susanna is here, we're going to ask her what she's into as well. And this is a segment where I'll share with you all the things that I'm actually into, from apps that I'm using to books that I'm reading to anything else I think you might find useful, helpful, and fun. So be sure to wait until that segment and take some notes, okay? Because these are all of the things that I'm currently doing to help myself have the most incredible joy-filled life I can have. All right, so let's get into it. We have talked about joy killer numero uno, complaining. Particularly chronic complaining. Because it steals our joy. It is a bandit in the night. Not even in the night. In the morning, in the daytime, in traffic, while we're waiting at the DMV. All of those times, okay? And this isn't just some theory or anecdote that, you know, complaining steals our joy, I'm pretty sure. There is real scientific studies that point to this being an actual fact. Chronic complaining actually puts our brains on a cyclical course that makes it increasingly difficult to ever experience joy. It's almost like a drug. You know, you take a drug and it releases dopamines or chemicals or something, and then after a while you just adapt to it. And it becomes harder and harder to get those same feelings. You have to use more and more. It needs to get more extreme. And then pretty soon you have a hard time feeling anything at all. Complaining has kind of that similar effect. And it also changes our brains of those around us, which is disturbing, especially if you're married to somebody who's a big complainer, a big negative Nancy. Okay, do you remember the study of people who were in hospitals, if they had a negative complainy spouse, it took them longer to recover? I mean, that's some bull crap. Every single one of us who has a negative or complainy spouse, now we're mad. Now we're mad. I mean, it's one thing to control our own complaints to make sure that we have the most joy-filled life, but now it's their fault that we're messed up. Our spouse complaining, if you live with them long enough, it can actually change our brain. So it is so important that we are diligent and we protect ourselves from complaining and from negativity. It is absolutely so important. But you know, complaining has disastrous effects, not only on our mood, but in our relationships, in our life. So no more complaining, or at the very least, reserve it for one of those like real life challenges. You know, I got a little, whenever I talk about not complaining, I will always, and I always have, get pushback from people who are very miserable right now with our current political situation. And they almost feel as if complaining, if they don't complain, then the world is going to end and people are going to suffer. Listen, complaining and rage is not as effective as you think. And, you know, listen, I know that there are times where outrage or an outpouring or a pressure has caused important policy changes. I mean, I get that. I get that there is, to some extent, things can get done when people are upset about something. So, for instance, if I wanted to use the example that people were very upset about the children and the way they were handled at immigration, that anger, that upsetness caused the administration to make a change, right? But I would pose to you that not complaining and that making joy a priority in your life does not equal denial and apathy. It can, I suppose, if that's the kind of if you're like, well, I'm happy, so I'm all about me and mine. But I've got to say, honestly, when we are confident, when we experience joy, we have hope and we have more courage. We can stand up for the things that we believe in. We can do it powerfully. And we can still not allow the bleakness of that situation to steal our joy. It is not an either or. Because here's the deal, guys. There was evil long before. If there is something happening in your life that you don't like and you've decided, well, I can't experience joy until this situation is fixed, listen, you're picking and choosing. There has been evil long before we came into this world, and there is going to be evil long after this world. So what's the solution? We just never experience joy? We live miserable, horrible lives? I don't think so. That's not what I want to do. I want my inner peace and my joy not to make me apathetic or to live in denial of things that are happening, but to encourage me to take a stand and to help other people and to love them. And if that means making phone calls, if that means going on attending a peaceful march, if that means giving people food at a soup kitchen, whatever that means to me, I want joy to be the center of it. Does that make sense? Okay. So listen, we got to get rid of the joy we got to get rid of the complaining, and at the very least, be more choosy about it. Wait to complain until crap has really hit the fan, because when we're complaining about every little freaking thing, that is just such a chronic cycle that can just have disastrous effects. Okay, so sparse it out a little. All right, don't waste it on venting, getting all ticked off because you're out of tampons. And your husband won't go to the store for you, okay? Which is cruel. I'll admit my husband always goes to the store for me. And he always gets the right tampons. He's a real hero. He's a real hero, all right? My point is, if you're going to complain, if you want to hold on to the right to complain, then at the very least, make that puppy count. You know, make it count. Let it be something just huge. Not every little thing, all right? No one even wants to be around you when we're acting like that. Okay, so, I mean, I have to say, once I started researching, complaining and studying up on the Bible and what it says about complaining, I can't tell you how many times I catch myself complaining. Oh my gosh, I am such a whiny baby, you guys. And I honestly didn't even know it. It just becomes so ingrained into how we communicate and how we process the world around us, right? And, you know, for me personally, the biggest thing that I complain about is that as a work-from-home mom, I love to complain that I don't have enough help and I don't have enough time to get things done that I need to get done. And the thing is that complaining makes me helpless. It pretends that there isn't anything I can do to better my situation. I mean, number one, I can pray for help. I can pray that God helps to guide me into improving my situation, into getting the perfect babysitter. Two, I could start searching for a part-time babysitter and not give up until I find the most wonderful one. Or three, I could be disciplined about working in time slots where the babies are in bed or not around. I could be more disciplined than I am right now. There are things that I can do. I don't need to complain about it. How about I just do something about it, right? That's the biggest thing about complaining, is that it just makes us a victim, and then our problem just continues to perpetuate and perpetuate and perpetuate because we pretend there's nothing we can do about it. There is plenty we can do about almost all of our problems, really and truly. Okay, so that's enough about complaining for now. Let's move on to joy killer number two, impatience. We want what we want when we want it, preferably right now. Am I right? And let me tell you, thanks to Amazon Prime, even though I have to say the two-day shipping is a lie, it still is faster shipping than anything else, and high-speed internet, and phones that are now practically on our wrists that make us act like we're freaking James Bond, it just escalates our expectations to crazy, unattainable heights. It's really made us silly. But it doesn't matter how much we evolve and how much technology quickly makes it so that our needs are met almost instantaneously, God's laws of sowing and reaping will never change. All good, precious, worthwhile things take time. That's it. And if we don't get this into our heads, then we'll plant a seed, we'll water it, we'll stare at it, check our watch, complain about the fact nothing's happening, tweet about the fact nothing's happening, Facebook the fact that nothing's happening, complain about it, tap our foot, check our watch again, then get flabbergasted and quit. We've got to get our mind right about how impatience is just getting into our everyday life and how unrealistic we are. All right? And the amount of people that quit prematurely is shocking. Why? Because they're impatient. And then they live their whole life wondering, what if I wouldn't have quit? And whether you're, you know, quitting on people or things, you know, how about we just not quit on people or things and instead put our faith in God and His timing? Because if we don't, it'll bring so much regret, so much sadness, and even suffering into our lives. We got to pump the brakes. We got to pump the brakes. All right? All we've got is this moment right now. Listen, I don't want to get all Eckhart Tolle on you. Okay? But so much of life is lived in the waiting. Personally, I've gone through such a long period of waiting. I know that this is a lesson from God because I am finally realizing that the most enjoyable, exciting, and thrilling things in a person's life is found in the waiting. If, this is a big if, they're conscious enough to not be complaining and tapping their foot the whole entire time. Life is actually lived in the waiting, so we would be fools not to enjoy it. Because let me tell you something, when it comes, it's really not the big deal you thought it was. I'm serious. You might have happiness for a minute. You'll adapt in a heartbeat. You'll adapt. Then new pressures, new things will come. So The process is where the beauty is. So enjoy the process. Now, of course, you got to be warned. All right. So the minute you try to improve any of these joy killers in your life, you're going to be tested. Oh, Lord, you are going to be tested. I'm telling you, the minute I made a commitment to patience, my girls gone lost their minds. All right. They lost their minds. It was like, I was like, who are you people? Who are you, possessed? Who are you people? I mean, I'm looking in the eyes of pure insanity. It was amazing. The minute I tried to work on being impatient, my patience was being tested pretty much every 5 minutes. And listen, I did good sometimes, and I did not so good other times. But I am learning how patience with others diffuses hot situations. Impatience ramps up the drama. And I don't know about you, but I want less drama in my life. Who needs it? Okay. See, because patience, when you're patient, it has a calming effect. It allows everyone to breathe, to calm down. It gives us time for our mind to chill from all that reeling and going crazy, right? It allows us to relax and to think more rationally. Impatience, on the contrary, puts immediate stress on everybody. It creates defensiveness and anger and frustration. I'm telling you, it's fruit of the spirit. It's important. Hey there, real quick. It is wedding season, and if you or someone you know is about to get hitched, listen up, because Zola is about to change your life. Zola, the wedding company that will do anything for love, is reinventing the wedding planning and registry experience to make the happiest moments in couples' lives even happier. From engagement to wedding and decorating your first home, Zola is there, combining compassionate customer service with modern tools and technology, all in the service of love. I was really overwhelmed when I planned my wedding, and I wish Zola was around because they make wedding planning so much easier. You get to create a free wedding website, register at their store, and so much more. You get over 100 beautiful wedding websites to choose from that fit any couple style and every type of wedding, and they're all free. Add photos, stories, and how you two met, travel and accommodations info, and even recommend things to do for your guests while they're in town for your wedding. Then, talk about easy, register with Zola. They have everything you could possibly want or need. Their store has the widest selection of gifts from all different prices. You also get free shipping and returns, price matching, and more. Have I convinced you yet for your own wedding or your friend's wedding or your daughter's wedding? I mean, honestly, why do anything other than Zola? So here's what you're going to do. To create your free wedding website on Zola, go to zola.com/AANDS. Again, to create your free wedding website on Zola, go to zola.com, that's zola/AANDS. Have fun. Living joyfully, not happily, okay? But having the state of being that is joy means we have to cut out the things that steal it. It means resisting those heated, stressed, or worried feelings and choosing another emotion, even if that means meditating while pushing your cart through Walmart. Okay, just keep your eyes open, all right? You don't want to hurt anybody. All right? We got to do whatever we got to do. Okay, so today we're going to get down and dirty with joy killer number 3, and that is judging. All right, and this, I have to be honest, this was a really hard topic for me to prepare for because I love judging. I love judging. In fact, while I was preparing for this, I was judging people while I was preparing for it. A matter of fact, I might share some stories where you could argue that I'm judging the person I'm sharing the story about. It's a tough topic, but we're going to do the best we can, okay? We're going to do the best we can because here's what's sneaky about being judgmental towards others. We think it's something that they deserve, something that is hurting them. Even if we don't share the judgment with them, we still think that it's something that they deserve without realizing it's actually destroying us from the inside out. So in today's episode, we are going to talk about what judging is, why we do it, why it's a joy killer, and why we're going to stop so we can live these freaking lives to the fullest already without wasting precious moments on trivial and meaningless joy-sucking things, okay? So let's get into it. Why do we judge? So from a psychological perspective, Dr. Elizabeth Dorrance Hall explains it this way. Judging is the act of applying an attribution. So attributions are thoughts we have about others that help us make sense of why people do the things they do. Attributions answer the questions, why did he do that? Why did I do that? When we go through the process of answering these questions, our brains are attempting to understand the causes of social behavior or the cause of our own behavior. There are two types of attributions we make about others' behavior. One, we make situational attributions. So we believe their behavior is due to something in their situation. For example, our coworker might have been short with us because he or she is tired and overworked. Okay? Personality attributions, on the other hand, are more about the person's character. When we make these attributions, we believe the behavior is due to the person's personality, assuming that same coworker who is short with us is impatient or unkind is making a personality attribution. So it's no surprise to you that as human beings, all right, we are more likely to give personality attributions. And here's the trouble with that. They are more enduring and long-lasting. Being impatient or unkind is a consistent way of being compared to being tired or overworked, which might be temporary. So we love to assign personality attributions to people. People we don't even know. We know nothing about them. Not a single thing. Yet we got their character figured out. We know every single thing about this person based off that one interaction we had in line at Target or in traffic, right? Such ridiculous human behavior. So, I mean, let's say your coworker is chronically late for work. Never do we give them the benefit of the doubt, thinking perhaps it's difficult for them to get childcare, or perhaps they're working two jobs, or maybe they don't feel well, or they're depressed and having difficulty getting to places on time. No. That would be far too generous of spirit, okay? Typically, we just assume they're lazy or entitled or they're selfish. We almost make it about us because they're late. It puts us out. Even if it doesn't, it puts us out. You know what I mean? Because we were there on time. If a friend divorces, we assume they didn't try hard enough. They lacked wholesome family values, or one or both of them were bad, or they were selfish people. We don't, of course, truly know why they divorced. Perhaps one spouse had past trauma they couldn't recover from and it made the marriage unbearable. We have no idea. We have no idea. Perhaps one or both were simply hurting so badly a separation was the only option for them or for the family. We don't know. We just don't know. So why don't we give people the benefit of the doubt? Why don't we first lead to a situational attribution, but then typically default to a personality character assassination? Why do we do that? I think we prefer this style of judgment because it gives us a feeling of superiority. When someone else has a speck of dust in their eye, it frees us up from that really annoying plank in our own, am I right? We can focus on other people's specks all day long if it means we don't have to face what's going on in our face. You know what I mean? There has to be some kind of perverse dopamine rush thinking about how terrible someone's personality is or how awful their mint color capris are. There's got to be some benefit we're getting. Remember, I've talked about this before. We are constantly, as human beings, running from pain and chasing pleasure. One great way to escape the pressure of pain is to focus on someone else and all their problems. I mean, why focus on a boring task at work when you can get to look at your coworker scrunchie from the 80s and judge them instead? Am I right? I mean, why focus on ourselves? Why focus on the fact that we've gained weight, that we're out of control, that we're unhappy, that we've got something else going in our life? Why do we always go straight for somebody else? Here's a story to help me illustrate this. Technically, I may also be judging by sharing the story, so just bear with me, okay? I'm doing the best I can. So I know someone who is one of the most judgmental people I've ever met. She is also one of the smartest and most funniest people I've ever met. She has unbelievable potential. And if there is anyone on the planet who could just try a little bit and then immediately become successful, it's this girl, okay? But she's never tried. She's been married many times, works jobs that simply require some paper shuffling, and has experienced a lot of painful and lonely times in her life. Whenever I'm with her and I hear her judge someone, I immediately just have to know that it's her escape from facing her own demons. Honestly, it's almost obvious because judging is a distraction. This reminds me of something Lucy, my 3-year-old, did the other day. She is obsessed with gum, okay? And anyone who has ever had a toddler knows that a toddler and gum is one of the worst combinations that has ever existed, Okay, anyway, I walked into the kitchen and I saw her scuttle off into the other room, which is a sign she has something she's not supposed to have. I followed her and I said, Lucy, what's behind your back? Startled, she pointed behind me and said, look, a dragon. Let me tell you something. I was so taken aback by her sophisticated manipulation tactics, I actually looked behind me. I just did. It was like I needed to reward her for the genius of the stunt she had just pulled. Okay? But what if judging is our way of saying, look, a dragon, to ourselves and to others, to distract us from those things in our lives we're ashamed of, things we're running from, things in our life we don't want people to notice, things we know are wrong, but we just can't quit it, like Lucy and my trident. So instead of playing this, oh good, she uses a scrunchie, one more person I'm better than game, what if we tried to live in humility, truth, and try a little empathy instead? I mean, what if? Psychologist and meditation teacher Tara Brach frequently tells this story. Imagine you are walking through the woods and you see a small dog. It looks cute and friendly. You approach and move to pet the dog. Suddenly it snarls and tries to bite you. The dog no longer seems cute and you feel fear and possibly anger. Then as the wind blows, the leaves on the ground are carried away and you see the dog has one of its legs caught in a trap. Now you feel compassion for the dog. You know it became aggressive because it is in pain and because it's suffering. We judge, we label, and we discard real people without knowing or understanding the context of their lives and the things that are driving their behavior. That doesn't mean we have to cozy up to toxic people. In fact, we shouldn't do that. But what it does do is open our eyes to their humanity. I've told this story before, but if you aren't familiar, there was a woman who was being extremely condescending to me through several conversations. She really spoke down to me as if I was stupid, okay? And if you've ever had that done to you, it is one of the worst feelings. Just hearing her name fills me with dread even to this day. After I got off the phone with her during one particularly brutal conversation, my mom called me right as I hung up with her, and I burst into tears, and I told my mom how this woman had treated me. And my mom said something that I'll never forget. She said, sometimes God allows people to treat us badly because it reminds us to never, ever treat other people that way. The truth is, even though I don't think I've gone as far as that other woman to be condescending, I know I can be impatient and that when I'm being impatient, my tone is often condescending. I don't always mean it to be, but I also don't go out of my way to make sure it isn't condescending either, you know? I don't do it a lot, but when I do it, it can be very hurtful. So if I do hurt someone's feelings, I'll have an excuse at the ready. You know, I had to be blunt. We were wasting time. Or I simply told the truth and I wasn't mean about it. If she can't handle it, maybe she can't do the job. I mean, you know, honestly, so Christ-like, Anna. Just bubbling over with the spirit of the Lord, okay? Excuse me. So if someone is engaging in a behavior we're tempted to judge, it's actually an incredible opportunity to look inward. I remember watching Maya Angelou's masterclass, and she said something that really made me think. I couldn't find the actual quote, but essentially her point was, we are all human. Whatever another human being is capable of doing, we are also capable of doing. So if someone shows incredible courage, so can we. If another human being shows incredible strength, we're a human being, so we can do that also. If they show incredible perseverance, so can we. If they show discipline, kindness, selflessness, and a good attitude, so can we. But then there's the flip side. If they can be evil, so can we. If someone can be cruel, if they can betray, if they can make a mistake or have a lapse in judgment or make a mistake, so can we. I'm saying if they can make a mistake twice, because my gosh, we are hard on people who make mistakes, even though we make mistakes all of the time. Do you remember when the world ruthlessly judged the mom who took her children to the zoo? One of her kids was an infant and her toddler ran from her. Or I don't know if it was a toddler, but it was a small child ran from her and slipped into the gorilla encampment. I mean, to save the child, they had to kill the gorilla. And there was a huge percentage of the world that was so outraged at the mom for allowing her child to get away from her, the poor woman and her family had to go into hiding for a while. It is so easy to judge. How could anyone allow their child to get away from them like that? Wasn't she watching him? How careless, how irresponsible. You know, what's also fascinating is that some people have those like backpack leashes on their kids so that something like that won't happen. People will judge people who have the backpack leash. So really, and excuse my language here, but you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't in the society that we live in. Someone will judge your behavior on either side. So isn't that peachy? Isn't that great? I mean, honestly. And then, of course, despite all of our best intentions, though, here's the deal. It's a little bit of karma. It's a little cause and effect, okay? Something happens to us that puts us in our place, although not all of us will acknowledge it. So here's an excuse. An example. Maybe you just look away for a moment yourself and the unthinkable happens. A mistake happens. Something happens. I have a friend who is an incredible, attentive mother, and her response to this public outcry and this outrage for this mother was that she shared a story of putting her toddler son to bed on an unusually beautiful day for the season, and she cracked open the window for some fresh air into his bedroom. About an hour later, she says she just had this overwhelming feeling to check on her son. When she did, the window was pushed all the way open, the screen was missing, and in the distance, she saw her son toddling down the middle of the road. He had never tried to escape his crib before that moment, let alone pry open a cracked window, rip out the screen, and drop onto some bushes and peace out down the street. I mean, that happening was so unimaginable to her, so impossible to her, she couldn't even have prevented it in her mind. But it happened. And you know what? When she shared that story, a woman left a comment under that post and said, "I have been caring for children my entire life and nothing like that has ever happened to me. Try harder." Ugh. I get sick just remembering that woman in that comment. I mean, good for you. Good. I mean, do you need a... Shall we applaud? Do you need a back massage? Do you get some flout? Do you get a medal for being so perfect, lady? She's full of crap. I'm just going to say it right now. She's full of crap. Nobody's perfect. I want to know what that woman is hiding. That's how bold I'm going to get with this. What are you hiding? Because anybody who acts like that, like they're perfect, they've got something to hide. And the perfection and the judgment is a ruse. It's a distraction. It's a look, there's a dragon. Right? I can pretty much darn guarantee it. We're all humans. Under certain genetics, certain upbringing, certain God-given temperaments, and certain environmental factors, we are all capable of behaving in the same exact way. And you're like, oh, well, what about murdering someone? Surely, I mean, I would never, ever, ever murder someone. Well, I can tell you right now, I don't think I would ever murder anybody either. But here's the deal. Most of us, you know, who say that, get married, and then at some point we're like, you know what? I can see it. I can see how a person would snap and murder, okay? All right, so that's a joke. But let me tell you something. All of us, especially those of us without God and without hope, if exposed to enough trauma, to enough drugs, to a mental illness, to abuse or rage, we could absolutely murder someone. We all have fallen short and need God every single day. And here's another truth. God loves every single one of us just the same. So when you're judging someone, you are judging God's child. All right. I mean, I don't know about you, but if I was going to bully someone, even if it's in my mind, I don't want it to be God's kid. All right. I don't want it to. Could you just imagine you're just bullying somebody and then God shows up and he's like, hey, quit talking to my kid that way. Oh, that would be a bad day. Oh, that would be a bad, bad day. Hey, I gotta just take a quick second to talk about Casper. I'm not talking about the ghost, okay?
If you have back problems, old injuries that rear their ugly head, or simple sleep or comfort issues, then listen up because I think Casper is your solution. Casper is a sleep brand that makes expertly designed products to help you get your best rest. Listen, you spend one third of your life sleeping, so you might as well be comfortable. Am I right? I've been mattress shopping before and it was nightmarish. There was like 500 different kinds, firm, soft, sort of firm. I was laying on all of them. I couldn't tell the difference. And who really knows what's the best one anyway? Let's make it simple and just pick the best from the get-go. Casper offers two different kinds of mattresses, the Wave and Essential. They combine multiple supportive memory foams for the perfect amount of both sink and bounce. And here's why it's so affordable. Casper cuts out the middleman and sells directly to you with hassle-free returns and is delivered right to your door in a small, how do they do that, sized box. And if you think it's too good to be true, just go to Amazon and read the reviews. You'll see. So here's what you're going to do. To get $50 off towards your select mattress, visit casper.com/AANDS. That's A for Anna and Susanna. And use code AANDS at checkout. That's casper.com/AANDS using code AANDS at checkout to get $50 off your select mattress. AANDS. Don't forget it. Okay, bye. So, God loves every single one of us. All right? So we don't want to judge another one of God's kids. We just don't. So beyond that thought, what are other reasons we shouldn't judge? It makes us an immediate hypocrite. Christians are often, well, judged for one, but they're also judged for being hypocrites. This is because we're human just like everyone else, but some of us, once in the church, speak as if we are practically transformed into Jesus and incapable of any kind of sin. It's easier for us to point out the flecks of dust, all right, in somebody else's eye than remove that secret huge plank in our own. Maybe we're afraid our Christian friends will judge us, so we judge others. Also, because we're human, if we have any shame or sin issue in our life we're trying to hide, the best way to hide it is to constantly project that outward. There is no coincidence that a congressman who is the most ardent and vicious with his language and his anti-gay legislation is caught soliciting sex in a male restroom. That's not a coincidence. They are directly related. His disparaging comments about that kind of thing, his disparaging remarks, his intense and aggressive legislation, and then he's caught soliciting sex in a bathroom. That's not a coincidence. And I don't remember the guy's name, but he's not the only one. This happens all the time. Or they're caught in parks with other men. These aren't coincidences. They're directly related. All right? In fact, the more vicious, think about it this way, emotional and angry someone is when judging a particular person or persons, the more likely it is that they are engaging in the same behavior they're condemning. Shame is so incredibly destructive, and it manifests itself in so many destructive ways. That's why if we're a believer, God says, you know, there is no shame, there's no condemnation. Because it not only destroys us, but it causes us to hurt other people. Here's another reason. Number two, we shouldn't judge other people. We look dumb. Have you ever judged someone and you were wrong? You look and you feel dumb. And you feel bad. I gotta tell you, I remember my best friend from college. She's actually the wonderful woman who started Hahas for Hoo-Has with me and then left to pursue missionary work. When I first met her, I couldn't stand her. I thought she was fake. I thought she was annoying. I thought she was overly touchy, and I wanted nothing to do with her. She was applying to be an RA at the residence hall that I was working at. And I remember interviewing her, and I was like, there's no way I would let her work here and work here with me. And I kid you not, I had a voice inside me that said, she's going to be your best friend. And my mind immediately said, no, she isn't. You're crazy. No, she isn't.
Not going to happen. Can't stand the woman. I was judging everything about her. And I don't know why. I just think she was so happy and so cute. I don't know. I was just judging her. And once I got to know her, she's the most wonderful, most loving, most hilarious, most funny, most adventurous, most inspiring people I've ever met. And I don't know if I've ever told her what I just told you. And I'm hoping she doesn't listen to this podcast and get her feelings hurt. No, I have told her. She does know that her first impression with me wasn't great. All right. And she has even said, you know, gosh, in those early days, I would just try too hard. So here we are judging people. So here's an example. Someone comes into an interview and they're feeling insecure. And so they overperform. So we judge the overperformance as a character flaw without having compassion and empathy that maybe they're just nervous. Maybe they are intimidated by you. Maybe they like you and want to be friends with you and they're feeling awkward. How many relationships or awesome things have we turned away just by judging it too quickly? You know? So you look stupid. When you prejudge something, you look dumb. So that's a good reason not to do it. Don't look stupid. Okay? Here's another one. We look cruel, even if we don't mean to. Here's one word of caution I have. Thanks to social media, judging can cause blanket damage. So even if you judge someone in a comment that isn't directed to anybody specifically, if one person reads it because you're commenting and that thread goes into their feed. So, you know, if sometimes you comment on some type of thread and then that thread will pop up in other people's feeds, they'll see it because Facebook is like, hey, see what your friend's commenting on, you know? That's why you got to be careful if you're friends with your mom or your grandma, all right? I have one friend who, her brother-in-law was making comments on kind of like porny-ish posts, websites, and pictures. And when he got called out on it, he was like, oh my gosh, I had no idea that people could see what I'm commenting on. Okay, yeah, listen, get what you deserve there, buddy. Wife wasn't too happy about that one. All right, so just be careful when you're commenting. I'm getting off track. So if you're judging someone in a comment, but it's not directed towards someone specifically, if another person reads it because you're commenting on that thread, it can really hurt other people. So let me give you an example. This one is dumb, okay, but it's relevant. A Facebook friend of mine recently posted a meme that said, it just said, if you don't let your dog on the couch or let them on the carpet or in your bed, you shouldn't have ever gotten a dog in the first place. It was basically judging people who have restrictions for their animals. You know, I guess only like true dog lovers will let their dog be gross everywhere, all over your house. Otherwise, you have no love in your heart. I mean, I don't know what the meme meant. It was just judgmental. It was immature. And here's the thing. My friend posted that without realizing that someone like me, I don't let my dog on the couch. I avoid his time on carpet. In fact, I was looking specifically for a home that didn't have carpet because of him. And I stopped allowing him in the bed ever since I had kids. So basically everything she judged that would make me a terrible dog owner is something that I do. But here's the deal. The reason he isn't allowed on the couch is because he destroyed a very expensive couch I used to let him get up on. He destroyed it. And it was pricey and it was a devastating loss. So to protect my furniture and my investment, he is not allowed up on furniture unless I am there with him. Okay? He wasn't allowed to go upstairs onto the carpet. Here's the reason why. Because he uses the opportunity to rub his dirty butt on carpet, people. All right? And he had left poop stains and other messes on the carpet, and I had crawling toddlers, and I wanted it to be clean and sanitary for my babies. I didn't want them crawling all over dog crap. All right? So that's another reason. Another reason I didn't let him on my bed. There were times I would let him on my bed. I would get so much hair in my bed, I felt unclean. I didn't like it. That was one reason. But I always felt guilty or I felt bad because he'd cry. So I'd let him up on the bed, maybe put a blanket down or something. But the time I had to stop was when I had an infant, and I had an infant in my bed, and he's big and he's burly and he doesn't know what he's doing. And at one time he got too close to the baby, almost smothered her. And so he had to be gone. So I had very valid reasons for doing what I did. And that stupid little judgy meme offended me. It offended me. So, you know, what is that how we want to spend our day? Just judging people? I'm going to share this and just tick a lot of people off. I don't know their situation. I don't know why they have the rules they have, but I'm just going to judge them anyway. And, you know, here's the thing that really stuck in my crawl. She's only had one dog in her life, and she left that dog with her husband when she left him. Okay, see, this is where I say I get a little judgmental myself. I'm just saying, I'm using this as an example that, boy, human beings can be so audacious. We can be so audacious with our judgment. And we can be so blinded to our own behavior that we don't even realize we're being audacious. You know what I mean? It's the hypocrisy. We can be so entrenched in our own hypocrisy. We can believe our own lies so much that we do really silly things. Like put up a dumb judgmental meme when we are certainly in no place to be judging anybody about anything. You know what I mean? So we have to be careful. We just have to be careful. Here's another reason. Humility is the path to greatness. Jesus tells us this in the Bible, and it is true. It's obvious that God is not a fan of us judging other people. He makes it clear that we all fall short, that God is the only one who can judge. Leave it to him and leave it to him alone. But why is this such an important theme throughout the Gospels? It's because judgment not only destroys us, but it can destroy a community. It can destroy families. It can destroy friendships. Righteous judgments, cruel judgments, they isolate and they divide. That is the opposite of love. That's the opposite of who God is. And that's the opposite of what God wants for us. But here's the good news. Once we have a judgment in our minds, we can recognize that our brain is trying to make an attribution to understand that behavior. We can catch it. And we can stop it right in its tracks. And here's the best part. We can then just get curious about it. Remember, thoughts are not us, and they have nothing to do with the kind of person that we are. They are just thoughts that go right through our brain. We have the choice whether to jump on that train of thought or not. So the difference is, it's not that you have the judgmental thought, it's whether you decide to jump on that train and ride it all the way home. That's the difference. All right? So if we stop and ask ourselves, why am I judging this person right now? If we're truly honest with ourselves, we can detect a hurt or an unresolved problem in our own lives. And once we become aware of that, conscious of that, we can begin the process of healing in our own lives. And that's the space where true healing begins. That's the space where true joy begins, where true joy thrives. All right? So no more judging. It's not worth it. We're not perfect. People aren't perfect. Something's going on that's causing them the way they behave. Forgive them. Move on. Worry about yourself. You'll be happier if you do. You'll be a better person if you do. You'll have better character if you do. You'll grow as a human being if you do. I know it's painful to look inward and to look at ourselves and to look at our hurts and the fact that we might be judging someone because we're jealous because we think they're pretty and we feel fat and frumpy. We're judging somebody else because we are so strict. We have such a tight budget that we are eating noodles until payday and our girlfriend just got herself a new Range Rover. You know, we've got to look inward at what is going on. Why? So then it's like, okay, so I think that I am frustrated that I am on such a tight budget and that I am struggling. What are things that I can do to help my situation? Because obviously struggling is hurting me. What are things that I can do? And then we start to investigate ways that we can get out of debt, ways that we can work our budget, ways to increase our income. We start to get creative. We start to work towards the process, and before you know it, our lives are getting better. That's what being aware, that's what being curious, that's what being cognizant does for us. So use those moments where a judgmental thought enters your mind to look inward and at yourself. All right, so agreed. Let's agree to help each other out, okay? Let's agree to help each other out with this, okay? So, are you guys ready for it? It's what I'm into, what I'm into, what I'm in into. Like I said, I don't have a budget, okay? So don't judge my segment intro, okay? I'm doing the best I can. All right. So let's talk about what I'm into right now. First of all, I'm into the book 1,000 Gifts by Ann Voskamp. And this also happens to be the Word Up Club's book of the month. Ann writes like a poet and so beautifully captures our continual conflict with how can God allow such horrific things to happen with being able to live joy-filled, gratitude-filled lives despite how hard life can be. It is moving. She explains things in a way that I've never heard of before. Using scripture just blows my mind. It's a beautiful, wonderful book that can absolutely be transformational if you read it all the way through and take it seriously. So, love Ann Voskamp's book, 1,000 Gifts. Okay, and so I will leave a link to this to that book in the podcast notes. So please use it if you'd like to get yourself a copy, and please use the link that I give you because it helps keep the lights on over here. All right. So when I can, I will use affiliate links to help support this podcast. So if you love the podcast, if we give you any value at all, please use those links and it helps us out however little you can. So if you'd also like to join our book club, so we have the Word Up Club. It's not just a book club, but one thing that we do is that we do have a book of the month where we go over a book together, and then we do have like a book club session at the end of the month. If you'd like to be a part of that, I really hope you would. Just go to annaandsusannashow.com/join to learn more. Okay, so here's another thing that I'm into. It's an app called Day One. It's a journaling app. I like to keep a handwritten journal. Okay, I take time to pick out what journal I'm going to have whenever I need a new one. I really take that seriously. And having a handwritten journal is something I'll always have. But for my prayer journal, I found that it was hard for me to locate old prayer requests. They were often buried in a whole bunch of other scribblings and words and mind purges that I would often put into my prayer journals. And so when I'm praying or laying my heart out bare, my mind is just really fast and, you know, writing longhand, I just have a hard time keeping up. So using this app and being able to type into this journal helps me to keep up and say what I truly want to say to God and to myself. But then it also helps me to track better because it, the way it paginates the journal entries, it allows me to go back and really find my prayer requests so I can see all the wonderful and beautiful ways God has answered my prayer. All right. So I love this app. Give it a try if you're looking for something new. It is free. I believe there is a premium upgrade. I think there's like a small fee if you want to have a year-long subscription. It's not very expensive if you wanted to do that, but you could also use it just fine for free as well. So check that app out if you are looking at it as a way to track either your journal entry about your life or your prayer journal or your goals or anything. And it also allows you to add photos and do a lot of other cool stuff. So check that app out. I love it. One last thing that I'm into. My husband and I make sure that the kitchen is spotless before we go to bed. This is a discipline. This is a discipline because I don't know about you, but clutter, again, has been scientifically proven to have very negative effects on us. Okay, it makes us, when there is a mess in our home, there's a mess in our mind. Okay, so it's very difficult for us to be clean and clear and creative when there is chaos around us, okay? So But, you know, when you have kids and you work and you're working and things are crazy and you have dinner, you know, you're kind of tempted to kind of maybe half clean up and then just go crash on the couch and just chill and rest. And before you know it, you're moving into the evening and, you know, making sure you have a spick and span kitchen before you go to bed is not always the easiest thing to do. But I'm telling you, it is a life changer. I know I say life changer way too much, but it's because I believe it. It just is so helpful, because waking up to a messy kitchen is an awful way to start the day. It's depressing. You're trying to make coffee and the sink is piled with dishes. You can barely get to the faucet. It's terrible. And it's so hard for me to get the day off on the right foot when I just wake up to a pigsty. It's like I wake up and I'm immediately stressed. And that is not how I want to enter my day. I want to enter my day at peace. I want to enter my day hopeful. I want to enter my day as a new slate for something awesome that's about to happen. And when I wake up to a pigsty, all of that flies out the window. And the only thing I can think about is that my kitchen is a pigsty. So one way to increase my chances of a joy-filled day is to suck it up, no matter how tired I am, and make sure the kitchen is poised and ready for me and for my family in the morning. So trust me, that habit will not only make you happier, it will help you be more focused and more productive. So, all right, guys, that is it for me today. I am humbled and so grateful that you were listening. I talked briefly about the Word Up Club. This baby is changing and evolving and getting better and better. We have added the Book of the Month Club, and we have also added monthly workshops, because my goal, and I told the members this, is I wanted to give them way more value than what they invest. I just want it to be so abundant, right? And I think by doing that, some ways of doing that is to giving people what they really need, what they really want, ways to learn, ways to grow, ways to evolve. And so I have added these elements to help us out, because really and truly, it's just my heart to help all of us, myself included, to be filled with as many God-given joy opportunities as possible during our time on earth. It really is my heart song. I want to help myself, and I want to help you be filled with as much God-given joy as possible. And, you know, laughter ain't bad. And talking about our problems in a way that's relatable. You know, listen, I just do the best I can. So if you are interested in joining the Word Up Club, or if you'd like to learn more, go to annaandsusannashow.com/join, and we would love, love, love to have you. All right, then, I guess, after all that, this is the part where I say, until next time, goodbye.